Hey everybody, let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have this thing. Tonight, Larry R. is going to be coming back to the podium. I think it's been about 10 years from what I'm hearing from Tim Moore. He was here before I ever got involved in the meeting. His sobriety year is 1999, so I guess he partied like it was 1999 until it was. So Larry, come up and tell us what happened.
Evening, fam. I'm Larry, and Larry's an alcoholic. How y'all doing in life? It's been about 10 years. So give me a minute, because I need to get Larry out the way. You know. Well, I'm going to tell y'all, it's a love story, a hate story, and a comedy. That was my life. It ain't in yet. It's still rolling. Okay. I'm the second oldest of four. I have an older brother and I have two sisters. Born in Chicago, Southside. You know, I had a father who had a third grade education and my mom had a ninth grade education. But they were some hard workers. My dad worked so hard he couldn't read, he couldn't write. And he taught himself how. He got a job at the U.S. Steel, worked there 33 years. My mom couldn't type, but she was a secretary, got a city hall, and became precinct captain. You know, and they had us. My brother was born in epilepsy, so that made me like the oldest, because he was doing seizures. My dad became a workaholic. Because after he worked about 10 years at the steel mill, he started his own business, construction company. You know, and it's still running today. My mom was an alcoholic, but she was a precinct captain. You know, and I had a lot of times with her. I heard her talk about my mom brought home a lot of uncles as we were growing up. My dad worked three shifts, morning, afternoons, and evenings. And when he was doing the off days, when he was doing the morning part of the day, he started a construction company. He'd set us up and go to work. Then he'd go back to the steel mill. My dad bought us a 13-room house in the middle class of South Shore High. South Shore neighborhood. We were the first black family to live there. This is 1964. I remember. And they talked about that for a while. And it was a beautiful neighborhood. I never been around white people. I didn't want to sit there and tell you. So it was different. You know. They tried to buy us out. My dad wouldn't sell. My dad was a mason also. And he was a stubborn guy. Hardcore. And so we've stayed for years, and I went to South Shore High School in my high school season, 1971. I ran track and played baseball. Then I found about alcohol, Smith's beer. And in Chicago at that time, you can get you a 32 ounce for a dollar. And I used to buy about five at a time. on the 10 speed. Can you see somebody riding a 10 speed with a brown bag? With no plastic bags back then. Shopping bag with 5 32-ounce Swiss Marlboro. After the first two, it was kind of hard to keep me on that bike and that bike straight. But I didn't drop that bag. In my sophomore year in high school, I'm an MVP on the baseball team. Back kitchen. And the guys told me, man, you ought to smoke weed. See, you ought to be drunk and sloshing around and falling around like that. Smoke some weed. I said, nah. I know what alcohol do. I don't buy me a bottle of beer and I don't get drunk. I buy a nickel bag of weed. I might have grass. So that's how it went. Eventually, though, my senior year, I started dabbling. So, you know, I was smoking weed. I had a partner of mine that introduced me to Sherman Sticks, Angel Dust, Tack, cocaine. I fell in love with all that. You know, I graduated in high school in 1975. I was number 250 out of class of 500. I thought I was great. But my freshman year, I had an A+ average. So you tell me it went downhill quickly. You know, we're going to Illinois State to college, but I was chasing this cheerleader. And my dad told me, well, I'm not going to throw good money after bad. You go to any other school in the state of Illinois, I can pay for it. He said, well, I can't go to Illinois State. I ain't going nowhere. He said, fine. Monday morning, have your ass on the back of the dump truck. And that's when it started. And I started off as a laborer. At that time, he was paying me $65 a day. So, you know, that was good money, I thought. And I learned the craft. He taught me how to work. So in the wintertime, we did plumbing and painting. He also started buying himself apartment buildings. You know. Then my father died over as being a diabetic. And years started going past kind of quickly then. I was progressing in my drug of choice, which had narrowed down to cocaine, freebasing. You know. Then you had to carry around blue little bag with your alcohol, your grain, your stem, your pipe, all this stuff. You know. Then I was a chemist. You know. I just liked that lifestyle because I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool. That was my plan. You know. I still were able to go to work. Then I became a senior fitness. I started making $200 a day. He paid me $200 a day, 6 days a week. Saturday afternoon, I had $1,200. Monday morning, I was borrowing $5 to buy some cigarettes. You know, my daddy asked me one day, he said, man, what you doing, selling money? You know, because he said, I don't see how a man can have $1,200 at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. And Monday morning at 7 o'clock, you asking me for $5. What the hell are you doing? You know, then he caught on to that. And he told me, okay, I'll tell you what, boy. I'll start charging you $150 a week to stay here. You can get your mama $100. You can get your brother $25, and get your sisters $25. I said, oh. He said, yeah, that's the deal. So it was like that for a little while. Until I had a bright idea. I went to him. I said, if I'm paying you $150, and Mama $100, and Janice and Michael and Pat, they have a little money. I can't put a lock on my door. I can't put beer in the icebox. I can't have no company come over. He looked at me and said, Larry, you can have all that. You just can't have it here. So it was time to move. So I found me a studio. You know, I packed up my stuff. And I told him, I've got my own spot. You can't tell me what to do no more. But the funny thing about that, though, when I got in my place after the first couple of weeks, and I was coming home from work, had to have a sit down, went to the bathroom, did my business in there, and reached for some toilet tissue, and there was none. I opened the cabinet, because that would always be at the house. There was none. Now, I've got to ruffle up a brown paper bag. See, it didn't occur to me that my dad was buying all the stuff they were placing it there for me. You know, I just thought, miraculously, we never ran out of toilet tissue, never ran out of soap, you know, we never ran out of something to eat, because he wouldn't mind it. You know, I had the harsh reality of that. Now I'm on my own. I think I stayed there about, went to the winter time, which was about 5 months. I couldn't make rent, so I had to come back home. And I couldn't stay there. So I had a friend there. We got a place together. I didn't have no respect for her, no feelings for her. I just needed a place to stay in a warm room. And that's what I did. Until she got sick of my bed and kicked me out. So that was my trend. I didn't ever know how to talk to a female. They were objects to me. You know, I had some dope. I had some fun. I had some alcohol. I had some fun. I had some money. I had some fun. Half of them I couldn't remember their names. Didn't want to. I do my business and I'm out the door. That's how I live. Until the dope started taking more time from me to work. As time went on, my father fired me. My girl kicked me out. Now I'm homeless and unemployed. I lived 2 years on the street. I was sleeping in doorways, in alleys, bandominiums. You know, I was still trying to peddle dope. I became my biggest customer. So I had an idea of me and this other chick I knew, who was both out there. We'd go to Walgreens, buy a box of Motrin, and we'd go back to our little cubby hole, and we'd shave them down, stick them in the old used cocaine bag, heat it, crack it up, and sell dummy bags. We'd wait till about 3 o'clock in the morning, and from 3 to 5, we'd sell them early morning specials. You know, that's how we did it. You know, I wind up in lockup from the course of that numerous times. Fortunately for me, my mama's prayers and God's mercy, I never did no time. But I didn't get no better either. You know, so the judge told me one day, he said, "Larry, so you think we playing with you?" Now, this after I was in a car, in a stolen car. I have, a dime bag of weed on me, a $20 bag of cocaine, and no identification. But I wasn't driving, I was in the back seat. And so, my dad came to court, along with all the co-workers, they spoke up for me, and he let me off on a probation charge. And he said, from this point forward, Mr. Ross, I'm coming in, I'm going to check every docket in this courthouse, you know. And if I see your name even on traffic court, I'm coming in that courtroom, make sure you get time for that and the time you should have got today. You think I'm playing with you, Miss Ross? Try me. Try me, goddammit. And that's what he said in the courtroom, cursing me. And he hit his mind, get the hell out of my courthouse. I went straight to the liquor store. Bought me a pint of Jack, Canadian Club. I said, got away with that one. You know, didn't stop. Kept rolling, man. Mm-hmm. Wind back out on the street. You know, start doing things. Breaking down homosexual for high. I did that. My dad passed. We sold the house. My mom moved into one of the apartment rooms we owned. I'm selling her food out the refrigerator on the streets. She'll go grocery shopping on Monday, Tuesday morning. I'm in the house. I'm taking the food out the freezer, out the refrigerator, put it in the bath, going up on the corner and sell it. You know, this is what I did. You know, things I did, man. Times I went through just to get me a high. I'll say this. And I hope you ladies don't get offensive. I don't care. Proficient and they can kiss. The dick won't get hard no more. I had support in my house. you know, I let homosexuality pull down on me for a high. You know, I did what I needed to do. I had a guy named called Crazy Sonny. He used to jump cars for people that was doing a one down the strand, and a battery went dead. He kept the battery in a wagon, and we would jump your car off. And while the car was running, he'll take the deposit post off and put tape on it and take the battery back out and close the hood and tell you, don't stop till you get home. You get to a stoplight, throw it in park, start it up. The next day she tried to start it, she ain't got no battery. But we got our little $20, we gone. We used to get a cardboard, slide up on the cars, cut out converters. We did about 3 a night. We stayed in them abandoned millions. All I had was a light, a lamp, that I do an extension cord, throw it out the window, go downstairs, grab it, go to the neighbor's house, outside junction box, plug it in. That was my light. And I was okay with that. You know. But I decided to go. I got sick and tired of that. I decided to go into a Catholic, just a Catholic church. They had a, what do you call it? Anyway, it was a mission, and I went in there. Garden of Eden mission, I went in on State Street in downtown Chicago. I had to join this Bible study to get in and get a bed. But, which I was cool with that. But what they had, one of the stipulations was you had to go to service every day, 3 times a day. You had to get a job inside the church, and I got on security team. And they had to go out and pass out tracts and witness to people on the street. I wasn't down for that part. But I played the part. I went out there. I had my tracks. First night I went out there. You know, I had a few dollars I had got from somebody. And I went and bought me a half a pint of Pep and a Snap. I drank that, threw the tracks in the garbage. And I stood out there for about 30 minutes and came on back. And got away with it. So I was doing this every night. Working there at the mission, they gave us $4 a month. So you can buy some soap, writing tablets, stuff like that. But they fed you, they clothed you, and you had your hot, had your cot. So that was cool. You know, that was enough for me to buy me enough Pepsi Snaps, hide it around the church, and get through. That's what I did. So I met this guy inside. He was a pickpocket, but he was the chef. And he was there because he was a big pickpocket. He was good at it. He walked past, stick your hand in your pocket, and pull out your money before you know it. They were selling food out the back door. Now, we go out there at night and hit these restaurants, and they give us food. You know, you close up, big fancy restaurant downtown. And so we have big tubs of food. He'll get some trays and bring the forest trays and feed it up, and he'll go out there, out the back door, he'll sell them. You know. They had a barber shop and a clothing place there, too. And they were selling clothes out the back door. So I'm watching this. Now, this is a church. Saintly people. God-fearing people. Fucking crooks. You know. So I went and I got in with it, too. Cut me in or cut it out. That was my motto. So one day I'm at the front door. I met Bernie Mac and his wife. He wasn't a big star at that time. He was still driving trucks and doing this kind of skit on the train. But he had brought in 20 brand new coats, winter coats, and he donated to the church, or to go to the homeless people that had lived in the church. About 2 Sundays passed, I'm standing at the front door Sunday morning. The preacher come out with his choir. They all had on new coats. I said, ain't this about a bitch? So that God thing kind of went to the left with me. You know, everybody got game. Game on game. Who got the best game? That's who win. You know, survival of the fittest. I'm down for that. So I left there. I talked to the guy that took over my father's business. He gave me a job. Now I'm asking the guy for a job that from a business my dad owned. You know, that's how bad I got. So I did that for a while, and I moved into a rooming house. Oh, man, hotel, really. I had three walls and a fishnet ceiling. You know, $7.50 a day. I was still making, at this time, I'm making $200 now a day. I couldn't pay rent. I couldn't pay rent. You know, so they kicked me out of there. Now, I had a job and no place to stay. You know, that the job didn't last much longer, so back on the street I was. This went on, man, for years. I couldn't quit. And so I went to another recovery center, reach out and touch another Christian center. You know, and I stayed there for 15 months. You know, got a job at Haymarket House. It's a meal tip. Haymarket House is one of the biggest recovery centers in Chicago. I went to school. I got back. I went to Harold Washington Junior College because I was going to school for CDC 1, you know, Certified Drug Counselor. And so I'm working there. Been there about a year. Hadn't made a meet. Haven't got a sponsor. I'm just going through the motions. Until one night, they brought this guy in. He had five dime bags of cocaine, $300, and a watch. He was drunk and out of his mind. Now, when we pat him down, people have your supervisor there. So we can record everything, and he signed. Before I called him, I cuffed the dope, and I cuffed the money. You know. And I called him over there, and we logged in the watch. When that guy got sober the next day, he asked for his money in his dope bag. He showed the paperwork, you had no money, you had no dope. And he looked me in the face and said, "You Stephen Bastard, you stole my shit. I don't know what you're talking about." That's what I did. I did that for a while. How I got caught? I was hanging out, getting drunk all night, getting dope all night, went to work the next day, doing an intake. I got the guy at my desk. I nodded off. That's who I looked at. I'm in a deep line. When I come up, I just scribble something on the pad and blame him. And the man looked at me and said, "Man, you did that shit." He said, "From the looks of it, your ass need be in my seat." You know, you smell of alcohol, man. How long you been sober? Who are you? Who are your supervisor? So the supervisor called another guy over, Daniel, I believe, and told him to take my spot, and he pulled me to the side. He said, "Go home." I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "If you ask to say another word, I'll fire you. You're high, Larry. Go home. Come back tomorrow." So I went home. I came back the next day. They had my forms fill out. They're going to send me to Indiana for treatment. But when I got to Indiana, they thought I was a media tech. Instead of being a client, they put me to work. I was like, "Shit, I'm not going to tell no different. Now I'm in there holding class." I was like, "Really?" And I was there for 14 days, and at the end of the 14 days, they gave me a check. I was like, "Shit, it's better than Larry." You know? So, they brought me back to Chicago. I went straight to Kroger, straight to Jewel, in no clothes. Raised the Jewel, cashed the check. Went found the dope man, got out. Went to work, high as hell. They fired me on the spot. Back on the street I went. You know, dropped out of school. You know, so now, I had nowhere to go. So I called my sister in Atlanta. And I cried and told her, "Can I come there?" She said, "Yeah, but I ain't gonna send for you. You know, you get here the best way you can." So I had to go back to the guy that got my dad's business. He worked me 1 week. He said, "Larry, I'll work you, but you can't go out to the house. You can't go to the corner store. And the Friday when you get paid, I take you to the Greyhound station." And he did that. You know, Thursday night, he let me wash my clothes. I had a duffel bag. And he put all my belongings in that little duffel bag, and he took me to the Greyhound station. He had my money in his hand. He bought my ticket. He waited for the bus. I had my $600. He said, "Here, you can do two things. Take this $600, get off this bus, go get high, stay out my life forever. Or you can stay on this bus, go to Atlanta, clean up, dry up, and I stand behind you 100%. So I stayed on the bus, went to Atlanta. I got here, my sister said, "You got 90 days to find you a job and a place to stay. You can't stay here." You know, my husband was a fireman and a paramedic. She worked at the school. She had two kids. She said, we ain't hiding our jewelry. We ain't hiding our money. We ain't putting down our drink. It's in the refrigerator. If you touch anything, I kill you. You got one time. Yeah. And so I stayed sober. I stayed dry. I got a job at Bank of America Plaza, security officer. That was June 98. I stayed dry until January 1999. I got me a little apartment, you know, got me a bus pass, and I was going home. I got me a girlfriend, another victim. You know, had me another victim. She thought she had herself something. I baby regular and shaved regular, I ain't a bad looking guy. You know what I'm saying? So I fooled her. And then she dropped me off one day on her birthday. And she was going to take her kids home. She'll come back and we'll go out to dinner. I said, you go ahead and dress up, man. I got a surprise for you upstairs. So she left. I went through my house. Waiting on the elevator. The elevator opened up and this chick said, stand. Eyes big as my fist. First thing I said to her, where can get it at? Where you get it at? She stepped back on the elevator and took me upstairs. The dude placed with one floor below me, one apartment underneath me. I spent $500 on that man. I'm back on it again. The next morning, man, I was so ashamed of myself that I wanted to kill myself. So I walked out right there on Martin Luther King and Peyton Place. I walked to that McDonald's and then I walked up and found my little king. I just stepped out in front of the bus and stood there. Son of a bitch wouldn't want to know. He stopped. He stopped. And I got on the bus and I rode to the end of the line and I had my wallet. I had a card. It was my insurance company that had a substance abuse program. And I called them. And he said, well, if you can get down here, I'll talk with you. So he's giving me directions. I got back on the train, back on the bus, talk to the guy. I ain't got no more money, man. I need to get to Smyrna. You know, he drove me there. He gave me some change. And I caught, went to, into the downtown, and I got off at Art Center and caught the bus and going to Smyrna. I was going to Ridgeview Hospital. But it was a Tuesday. You see, the buses in Smyrna runs on off and on days, I guess, because he let me off on the corner and he pointed. He said, Smyrna, Ridgeview Hospital is 6 miles that way. It's June. It's hot as hell. And I walked. When I walked, I finally got there. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I missed the appointment. I talked to the lady at this, and the doctor said, I see him. I see him. And he came in, he said, well, I talked to him for a few minutes. He said, well, Larry, you sober now. He said, what I can do for you, I put you on an outreach program. Our program. We come here a couple of days, 3 or 4 days, 1 or 2 days a week, and sit there for a class and let you go home. So I'm sitting there looking at him. So I got up out the chair, I walked over and I closed the door. I came back and I leaned over the desk. I said, put him, motherfucker, I'll kill you and every motherfucker in here. I ain't going nowhere. I'm not going nowhere. I would die here today, and you would die today. That's what I told him. I threatened that man. And he looked at me, and I started crying. I keep, because I'm not going out that door. So they admitted me, put me on suicide watch. They had made a cot next to the nurse's station, building B, right in Ridgeview, you know what I'm talking about, building B, and that's where I slept. They put me on solo watch. I was there for 14 days. You know, when I left out of there, they took me over to building C. Now I'm over there with doctors and nurses and stuff. That was bad. This doctor had it so bad, he had food every emergency hospital in Georgia on that side of town that he couldn't even go in the emergency room no more, getting dope and getting pills. But I stayed. I met this lady on my last day. You know, named Beth Hope. And Beth told me, she said, are you ready? Are you really, really ready? I said, man, yes I am. So he said, all right, Monday, be at 1359 Briarcliff. And if you can convince them guys in that house, then you can stay. That was a three-quarter house of Hope Homes. And I met this guy named Terry Dunn. He was the house manager there. It was a Monday night. Monday morning, a group meeting for Monday nights. And he told me, he said, hey, man. I said, why in the hell are you so angry? What you talking about, man? I said, why are you so angry? I said, I'm not angry. I can see that you're angry. And you're scared. What's wrong? I know I can do this shit. I done tried 9, 10 different times. Now I'm in a new city, you know, with the same problem. At that time, I didn't know geographical change. Now, I made the move, but the problem was I brought the addict with me. And I knew I had to sell this to me so I can get in this house. I couldn't live on the streets no more. That was June 8th, 1999. I stayed in a halfway house for 3 years. My victim I had was a girlfriend. She left me because she wanted to get married. She had bought a home. And for the first time, I stood up and told the truth. I don't love you. I'm trying to learn how to like me. And I have to stay here to save me. And I went right down the street. And that's where I stayed. I used to walk in there. I knew it was true. 11 o'clock meeting, I walked in there. I walked in here. It was nothing but white people all through this life. So I walked back out the door and looked at the sign, you know, because I didn't walk to the wrong damn meeting. Then nobody looked like me. So I figured, would nobody understand me? You know what I'm saying? You know, I was unique. I had the problem. And how can I explain my problem to you? You didn't live in Chicago. You don't live on the south side. And you definitely ain't black. So what in the hell I can tell y'all? This little lady sat right there in that chair. And I came through the second time. I walked out and came back in. She walked up to me. God, I can't think of my name. I love that lady.
Beverly.
Beverly. Thank you. Thank you. Beverly. She said, I'm Beverly. I said, what's your name? I said, I'm Larry Ross. She said, get you a cup of coffee, baby. I'm going to sit by you. Beverly?
Nail.
Nail? Yeah. Thank you. Dog with the lip. Nail. Nail looked at me like, you know, Beverly had a heart of gold. Nail had a heart of stone. But she was a beautiful lady, too. I finally got to meet. And they made me welcome. You know, I said, shit. And I stayed here long enough to dry out. You know. And I listened to the guys. And I couldn't remember shit. I couldn't remember how to read. You know, but they had little signs all over the wall. Easy stuff. You know. One day at a time. Keep it simple. You know, I can remember that shit. And the biggest thing in my world, in my little world at that time, they told me to come back. I ain't never heard them words. I ain't lying. Nobody that I knew at that time, 41 damn years, ever told me come back. Not even a dope man. Definitely no female. You know, they were glad to get rid of my little punk ass. They don't want to come back. Man, I came at 11 o'clock. I came at 1 o'clock. And I came at 5:45. I came every day. You know, I went to my boss at Beckerman Plaza, changed my hours and got up 8 to 4 so I could make the, at least the 5:45 meeting. He had a brother that died, so he understood about alcoholism. So he worked with Earl Wood. Man, let me tell you, I finally relaxed and I listened to the program. And I heard my story being told. Do you know? And I shared for the first time. You know, and I cried like a baby for the first time because I was free. And then a strange thing happened. I met this other guy. There were blacks that came in to me. They kept coming back. He showed up, you know, and I met this dude. I was sitting right there, and I had to get a sponsor. So I asked him at the meeting, "Will you be my sponsor?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, I'll be your sponsor." He gave me his number, his name. "Call me at 10 o'clock. Because I stayed at 3/4 hour, so I wasn't. I think we got to 10:30, 11 o'clock, and then all the phones turned off. "Hey, call me at 10 o'clock. Hurry, make sure you call me." I call, I got home, I'm happy, I'm telling my sponsor, and my roommate saw something, I got a sponsor. I called him at 10 o'clock, and anytime this Larry Ross, he told me to give you a call. "Hey, Larry, glad to hear from you. Have a good night." What the fuck? I didn't sleep well that night, you know what I mean? So I couldn't do my job at the work, you know, so I came at 5:45, and he was in there. I said, "Man, what's going on? Hey, man, how you doing?" "Have fun." We said, "I had a cup of coffee." You know, and the meeting was over. He said, "Help straighten the chairs up." And here you can smoke in here at that time. "Help straighten the chairs up. Sweep the floor. Don't pass straight." So I'm like, "He's looking at him, man. Okay. He said, "We did that night." I said, "Man, what happened that night? Don't worry about it. Give me a call tonight, 10 o'clock. Okay. 10 o'clock came. I said, "Hey, time to Larry Ross, man. Don't get a call at 10 o'clock. "Hey, Larry, what the hell's going on? Have a good night." Son of a bitch. So I called him back. He wouldn't pick up. I came to meet him next day. He wasn't there. I came to meet him the day after that. He wasn't there. I didn't see time until Friday. And I was like, "Hey, nigga, what's fucking wrong with you? Give me a minute, nigga. What's fucking wrong with you, man? Doing me like that?" He said, "Man, I told him to make sure you were ready. So let's get to work." And he took me through the steps. He took me through the steps. He's still my sponsor today. He's my best friend today. You know, he'll say, "He never did that," but yes, he did that. Y'all know Tommy. He didn't. Tommy didn't pull no point. One thing I loved about Tommy, though, if you had a problem, go talk to him, and we'll see what the book says. Do you know what part that you play in? And that's how he was. He always came out the book. But you know, he always came out. He always do come out the book. I love that man. And then when I got another job at CDC, I started coming up, started making a little more money. Fell in love, met this female. Then I learned how to talk to women. Y'all wasn't victim of objects at that time no more. You know, I started even like y'all. I started even liking me. So I had this crazy notion, it's time to get married. So I did that. I thought I did that. She had other plans. So I met this chick. We dated for a long time. And then she's staying in her apartment, I'm staying in my apartment. I said, "Let's buy a house. Together we're making about $80,000 a year. So 42,000 a piece. Together 84,000 a year. I said, "Well, we make a lot together." So we went around looking around and I found this house in Norcross. By this time it's 2007. So I bought this house. Our credit was shot, but mine was good. For a dope fiend, no, check this out. From a homeless dope fiend, a homeless unemployed dope fiend. Now I had a job, and I ain't buying a house. Tell me God ain't good. And he was in love. Only problem, though, my fiance was in like. We moved in our house August 1st, 2007. She left me November 24th, 2007. She found a younger man, longer man, and left me. But the problem was, she didn't have no money, so she couldn't move out the house. And I couldn't put her out. You know, you get the hell out of my house. If I put me out, I'm going to put her out. So Lauren George's space. After, she had squatter's right. As you can see, one step of letter, one letter, one thing you don't know about, that's your residency. Now I had to go through the process. So I get a registered letter. Write out my complaint, go down to the post office, have it registered, and sent to her. Now she had 10 days to apply. After 10 days she don't apply, then I can go down to Lawrenceville, City Hall, or courthouse, petition for eviction. Which will give her 30 days before she go to court. Do you know? Then as he go to court, he'll have a 30-day absentee. So this police officer told me, "Man, let the woman stay, just move another bedroom and don't bother her." She left in January 2008. and she thought she broke me. My sponsor, Debbie, you people, were there for me. But I talked about it. I cried it. You know? And I lived there for 9 years. Beautifully. August 29, 2016, I had to foreclose on my house. That was hard. So hidden fee got too much for me. And I was stiff-necked and I was stubborn. I didn't want to do it. Had to file bankruptcy. Chapter 7. You know. But my sponsor, my higher power, who I choose to call God, you people, walk me through that. This program took a little short, dumpy, dope fiend black boy, you know, and help him grow up to be a man that stands in front of you today. You know, I made mistakes. I'm going to make a few more. But I'm still left. I'm hard-headed. But one thing I believe in my God, and I believe in this program. You know, today, I stayed in Norfolk, got my own apartment again, one bedroom. It's nice. I'm happy. I'm clearing my bankruptcy. And I'm rebuilding. You know what I'm saying? And the bad and the smart thing about it, the beautiful thing about all that, I have not used a drink or a drug. You know, I don't pray as much as I need to. You know, I still get in my way. But when they do, I call my sponsor and he give me a suggestion and I don't follow him. He said, well, tell me how that works out for you. After he kicks my ass, I call him back and say, you right. He said, you got your book? Let's go. And we go through the book. I could not have done that. I've been dead and gone. I'm in somebody's cemetery or somebody's penitentiary. You know, as you see, I'm not a big guy. I'm not a bad guy. I ain't no tough guy. I didn't belong in no game. You know, my daddy told me years ago, you belong to one game, you belong to the Ross game. And you tell the motherfucker that when they're beating your ass. But, yeah, I belong to the Ross game. And I belong to Napa. Because, see, y'all stood in the gap for me. You know. Earlier today, I was sitting out there in the pavilion, and I heard two ladies talk. They were talking about recovery. They talk about the hard times that they're going through, the difficulties that they came out of. But both of them said, I didn't use them. No one sold them. I'm good. Damn right you are. So you know what I'm saying? As long as you're sober, you're good. As long as you're sober, you got a 51% chance to make it. So you know, tell on it before it tell on you. Because guess what? It will tell on you. That's the way everybody in here learn. There ain't no secrets here. I bring all my shit right here. If I can't get my sponsor, I bring it here and put it on the table. We're going to do three things. We're going to solve it, laugh about it, and cry about it. But we ain't going to dribble. You know what I'm saying? I learned how to be a friend. Not only to you, but to me first. See, when I come in the room, I'm the sickest ass addict in here. But you know, left of my devices? Oh, man. But I come in and I tell on me when I fuck up. I tell on me when I'm scared. I'm not as angry as I used to be because I'm not as scared as I was. See, all anger is fear. You know? Lord, I can conquer that fear with the help of my high power in these rooms and this room. I'm going to be high. I don't know if I was shot, but man, let me tell y'all something. I was thinking on the way over here, what the hell I'm going to say to these people? And a good friend. Tell the truth. So I don't know if you got anything out of that. I know I do. It's a beautiful thing to be in recovery, man. You're going to have some hard-ass days. Some lonely, long-ass nights. But you know what I'm saying? But stay down. You know, if you stay down and stay there long, you're going to hear. They told me, God told me, wrong. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. You know, And all you gotta do to be ready is be willing, man. Willing to accept suggestion. Willing to do the hard part. That's tell on you. You know what I'm saying? For a lot of time during that walk, all I had was me and my God, who I didn't believe in. You know, I didn't believe him. I know he left my ass out there. He let the liquor store close before I got there. He let the dope man wouldn't take short. Do you know what I'm saying? Hey. So see, today, I don't look at the liquor store. I'm going to worry about McDonald's closing now. I'm going to get some fat off me. But that's all right. You know, that's all right. So if you need someone to talk to, and you don't think you don't have nobody, or you think you're unique, look at the brother or the sister next to you. They going through the same shit. You know, you stand the gap for her, she stand the gap for you. Together in this room, we stand the gap for one another, and we can get through this one day at a time. Sometimes you break that shit down to 1 hour at a time. Don't drink, don't pick up. Keep coming back. Thank you. Let me show you.
For real. Larry, thanks for the spiritual bias, brother.
And years or multiples, the blue chip. Having birthdays tonight? Hey! Oh, wow.
Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Pat McDonald, and I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
My sobriety date, I stopped drinking September 1st, 1975. However, I took tons of drugs for, well, Valium for a couple of days, so I had to change my sobriety date, September 15th, 1975. This is 41 years.
Man, that's awesome.
Think about a lot, and of late is we read the promises at all the meetings. And if you're new, the one thing I will tell you about the promises, AA under promises you on the promises. But if you stay sober, work this program, you will see that they over deliver in everything they say in the big book. So, thank you.
That's good.
Yeah, tell him I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Larry. It's great to see you and hear your story again. Been too long. This is my friend Jeff, and it's his birthday. And Jeff has really hung in there. He bounces back. You can't keep him down. And now I think he's more active than ever in AA. He works with a lot of people. He's all over town going to meetings. I'm proud to call him my friend and proud to give him his 6-year chip.
Yes. I'm Jeff, I call it.
Hey,
everybody, 6 years. Larry, our stories are very similar there towards the end. I think we were sharing the same chairs there about the same time. I picked up, I don't think I picked up a chip here then, but I was 19 years ago. I think Debbie was at the first meeting I was at in this room. And I picked up my first white chip in a sister fellowship 26 years ago. And I say this, I've been saying this for the last couple of years when I pick up a chip, is that it shouldn't take 26 years to pick up a 6-year chip, but it did for me. And I did things a little differently this time. I kept things simple, got into a routine. I had a desire to change. And every meeting I'm at, there's people here that have a profound effect on me, and they don't even know it most of the time because, you know, AA is a program of attraction more than anything else, and I wanted what they had. And you know, I don't mean knocking them over the head and taking their wallet. I mean there was a peace and serenity that they had that I wanted, and you know, in order to get that, I had to change. And that's the key thing. You know, every step has a principle. If you add them all up, change is the one word that comes out of it all. Thank you very much.
truly hit a new low. Came to it somewhere strange to me. As I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take the edge, you see. I got nowhere to hide. An empty hole inside. It's the bottle, the book, or the gun for me. Seems like everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't outrun. Demons that are all around me. I'm a victim of life's sin.